Chapter 12. Elith stepped off the shuttle onto the boarding platform and immediately wanted to turn back around. A tsunami of motion and sound cascaded over her. Her time in the wild had finally tuned her senses to her surroundings. Here in the city, it was like her eyes, ears, and nose had all been wrapped in a coil of live wires, a lightning storm of sensation assaulting her from all sides and angles. The sheer mass of humanity seemed like more than should have been allowed on any one planet. Elith had to consciously remind herself that the cacophony was actually normal. She was the one out of step. She forced herself forward, navigating the throng awkwardly, partially due to her large backpack, but more because no one around her seemed to make any effort whatsoever to afford her any space. After about 15 minutes of swimming through the crowd, Elith found her way to a local transit desk, where an exceptionally rude attendant sold her an overpriced pass and seemed angry about the exchange. The packed public shuttle took her farther into the city center. Elith stood near the rear entrance and watched out the window, getting a sketch of the architecture and density of the place. Though the design and materials were of an older style, the Academy's influence was conspicuous. There was a certain elegance to the layout and balance of the structures constructed along the wide river that bisected the city. The buildings mostly shared a slender helix design, many spiraling several hundred feet into the sky. Ground-level thoroughfares and open spaces, too, appeared to follow an aesthetic reminiscent of the Academy, giving the city an open, welcoming, almost laid-back feeling. A place where lingering was invited, with more than enough time in the day for everything that needed to be done. Near the center of the city, Elith got off the shuttle and found a mid-grade hotel, spiraled like its neighbors, but the shortest among them by far. It was no more than 500 feet tall, but its ingenious exterior was blue at its foundation and grew gradually paler the higher it rose. Standing at its base, the effect created the impression that the structure was a beam of light, extending heavenward to infinity. She booked a corner room, one level above a lovely terrace it overlooked. The two windows gave her a wide view of the city, and with the terrace just one floor below, an alternate escape route should one prove necessary. The room was spacious and well-equipped, and felt open, even with the generous bed taking up so much room. It took an act of pure will for Elith not to crash immediately on the bed. Instead, she forced herself back out to wander a few blocks of the city, to start developing a sense of its pace and energy, and to evaluate her security. After having hounds at her heels for days, she found it disconcerting to have so many people behind her, no matter where she went. She spent a few hours observing, sometimes on the move, sometimes in place at a cafe or on a park bench, her mind all the while building a model of how the people dressed, moved, and spoke, and attuning herself, too, to the place itself. In that brief time, she discovered nothing to suggest corruption, neither of the language of the society, nor its effects within the land beneath them. That matter, though, would require more thorough investigation. Once she had a baseline, she visited a shop not too far from her hotel and purchased a handful of new outfits. It was more social camouflage than anything, but Elith knew she was going to need a few days in the city to evaluate it, and anything she could do to blend in was helpful. The presence of the local authority was substantial, and their eyes were the Hezra's eyes. And as unlikely as it seemed, she couldn't ignore the possibility that the detail would find some way to track her, even here. She stayed out as long as she was able, but eventually the toll of her previous day's flight through the hills drove her back to her room. Elith managed maybe an hour of sleep before the sudden sensation of falling and a voice calling her name jolted her awake. She sat up, adrenaline burning off the effects of the abrupt awakening. After a few moments, she realized what had triggered it. The Paragon was calling to her. When Elith activated her side of the connection, it was as if passing from one dream world to another. Once more, she found herself in a tranquil setting, guarded by impassable terrain. But this time, the elements were reversed. She was at the top of a mountain, surrounded by emptiness on all sides. The darkness over the land below stood in stark contrast to the jeweled brilliance of the sky above. Elith didn't recognize that sky. It certainly wasn't the view from the vaunt. The small, flat peak on which she stood hosted only a single ancient tree, its trunk gnarled and twisting beneath an explosion of purpling leaves. The area glowed with an orange-tinged pale moonlight without obvious source. Despite the altitude, the air was still and pleasantly warm, like evening in late spring. The paragon stood beneath the tree, her head just below the first wide branches. Elith approached and bowed. "Illumined mother," she said.
"Bright daughter, we have much to discuss."
"Straight to business, then." Elith stood at a casual attention. To her surprise, the paragon turned around and easily scaled the tree, perching on its lowest branch.
"I did so love to climb trees in my youth," the ancient woman said, her legs dangling. "And in my not-so-youth, I'm told it is unbecoming of a woman of my age and station."
Elith couldn't help but smile at the childlike image before her.
"A woman of your age and station has earned the right to define what is becoming, your radiance."
The paragon waved her hand dismissively. "I will allow your flattery only because I wish it were true. But if one is not free to play in one's own mind, then there is no freedom at all. And I fear this is the only enjoyment I shall find in our time together."
She seemed neither angry nor disturbed, but there was gravity to the words.
"I received your findings," she continued. "As a result, I felt it necessary to expand our circle of trust ever so slightly to the wisest of our elders. After much thought and debate, we have reached agreement. It will be difficult for you to hear, but you must understand that it is the only path forward we see, given the situation."
Elith wasn't going to like the outcome. She remembered the paragon's mention of the collection team, and in a flash of insight, saw what was coming. Recall. They had lost their faith in her, but she would hold her tongue, wait to hear the pronouncement before she argued.
"It is well, illumined mother," Elith said. "Whatever the house requires, I am its hands."
"I know, dear. It's why I sent you in the first place. After reviewing the data you gathered, we have deemed it best, I have deemed it best, for the consequences of this must lie solely upon me. I have deemed it best that you should put Quell down immediately."
The last four words haunted the air, immaterial yet striking with gale force. They were a complete reversal of her expectations, beyond any possible expectation. Any such act, without explicit authorization by the Hezra, would be a violation of every principle First House had taught her to hold sacred. Surely Elith had misunderstood.
"Illumined mother," she said.
"I know, my daughter. Neither of us could have foreseen this. I understand the full measure of what I am asking of you and the toll it will take. But you must trust that I would not give this command if there were any other way. Against the might and resilience of the Ascendants, there are few threats to be considered truly existential. But what you have found on Quell, I fear, is of that magnitude."
"But the analysis is incomplete,"
It is sufficient.
Elith said, then trailed off. Up until that very moment, she could not have imagined an order from the Paragon that she would not have obeyed. Even if the Paragon had demanded her return to the Vaunt against her objections, she would have relented. But here? Now? She found herself truly tested. Forgive me, I don't wish to seem disloyal, but...
I have no question as to where your loyalties lie, bright daughter. I would be more concerned if you did not protest.
This is a great burden to place upon you. The only comfort I can offer is that I alone know the part you play in this, and it is a secret I shall keep through pain and death.
Both of which are likely if we are found out. If I am found out. Hear me, child. I bear full responsibility for both the decision and the act.
I am not concerned for myself, Illumined Mother. If they destroy you, they will have destroyed First House.
The old woman chuckled, a jangling sound of amusement that would normally have lightened Elith's burden. This time, it left her unmoved.
I am not so powerful as that, dear, despite the stories they tell.
And admittedly, which I encourage, I am merely a link in the chain of paragons, stretching back ages, and that chain shall stretch forward for many more beyond me.
If things go ill, the standing of the house may diminish, but that too has happened before. All things ebb and flow. Even our mighty First House is not immune to the seasons of the cosmos.
Elith tumbled within a torrent of doubt. Could she refuse such a command? Could she execute it faithfully? Both seemed beyond her capability.
I don't know that I can do this, she confessed, as much to herself as to her superior.
It is a heavy task. But I fear you are all we have left, my bright daughter. The attention of the Hezra is on us now. We have slipped you in at the last possible moment.
Elith reacted sharply to the last comment. What about the collection team? The pause was enough to reveal the answer before the matriarch responded.
I was unable to deploy them, the Paragon said. If they approached now, it would tip our hand that we have someone operating on the planet.
There will be no doubt of our involvement once I complete the kill, Elith said.
And by then the Hezra's options will be to align with us or to face the Grand Council and admit their failure to detect so great a threat.
Such an admission would be very painful indeed, particularly in light of their most recent one.
The Paragon paused, perhaps waiting for Elith's spinning mind to absorb the information, or perhaps testing the depth of her curiosity. But then, after a moment, she nodded and continued.
What do you know of the Deep Cutter initiative? She asked.
Deep Cutter? Elith echoed. The Hezra's long-running, highly funded secret program. The secret was poorly kept among the Ascendance's highest level operatives. It's the Hezra's effort to cross the intergalactic barrier.
It is a failure, the Paragon bluntly replied. The Hezra Ka delivered the message to the Grand Council last evening.
The magnitude of such an announcement was not lost on Elith. For all of the Hezra's technological power, their aspect drives still couldn't reach beyond the border of the galaxy. Deep Cutter was meant to open the entire universe to the Ascendance's reach. To call it a failure was to rob the Ascendance of both its birthright and its destiny.
They've shut it down?
Oh no, not yet, not officially. Those tasked with the project haven't admitted it. But the Hezra Ka has keener eyes than most, and if he is making so startling a confession, then it is only the first move in some deeper game.
Though the connection wasn't clear, Elith knew that the Paragon wouldn't be sharing such information merely for gossip. Information was a tool, and the matriarch of the first house, a master craftsman. "And you believe it's related to Quell?" Elith said.
"It may be that their focus on Deep Cutter has blinded them to the danger posed by the planet. It may be that they have overextended themselves and lack the necessary resources and cannot openly admit the weakness.
Or there may be something more at work." Elith picked up the thread immediately. "You think they're hiding it on purpose?"
"I am not convinced of it, not yet. But I must consider the possibility. It is my burden to see all possibilities, Advocate, and my duty to weigh them."
The ancient woman looked up through the tree at the numberless stars above them, couched in infinity.
"We see only in part," she said. "Our view of that which surrounds us obscures that which lies beyond."
She sat for a long moment, staring up through the leaves above her, and then returned her attention to Elith.
"Remember your own skepticism when I first told you of this threat. The Markovian strain remains one of the most painful eras in the Hezra's legacy. Invoking its specter now will seem timed to strike at their most vulnerable moment."
"Even if we were to warn the Grand Council ourselves, that warning will be viewed through the lens of the game. At best, that would bring delay and obstruction. At worst, it will alert the Hezra to what we know. But this move will take us entirely off the board now. It will require the destruction of the old game and the beginning of one new. But it cannot be helped. The death of Quell is the only way to prevent its use as a vessel to carry on this branch of the strain. And that must be our first and foremost concern.
It must be your only concern.
All the rest belongs to me."
Elith had no response. She had long been aware of the political maneuvering between the three seats of Ascendant's power, but she had no direct experience with any of it. Her opinion of these so-called games was only reinforced by the Paragon's description, namely, that they were nothing but a vain and foolish pursuit, a cancerous plague undermining that which really mattered. The First House's warning of the strain would be interpreted as a political pouncing on opportunity, merely to leverage the Hezra's temporary weakness. But if that were so, how would the act of destroying a planet without authorization be received? After a moment, the Paragon sighed, and then the diamond edge of her speech gave way to a waxen resignation. In her voice, Elith could hear the weight of the matriarch's many burdens, her age, and unexpectedly, her deep weariness.
"The history of humanity is full of catastrophe," she said. "And in every case we look back upon the signs that clearly displayed the inevitable cataclysm and wonder why no one who was capable acted to prevent that which was so obvious. We are on the precipice of such a moment, Elith. This is a seed of the apocalypse. And if we do not act, or if we tarry, we alone will bear the responsibility for the harvest of ruin to come."
"Then it is the Markovian strain?
Not identical, no, but a distant variation, one whose underlying theme can be discerned by those with ears to hear, like an echo of an echo. A mutated version, perhaps, or an evolution. It doesn't seem to have reached Oroness at all. This branch is subtle in its workings. Perhaps you will be able to tell us more once the task is completed. But given what you've already found, it would make no difference if it were the work of only 50 corrupted individuals. The innocent many often inherit the suffering stored up by the words and deeds of the malevolent few. The paragon hopped down from her perch, landing lightly on her feet. "Perhaps now you understand more fully why I sent you," she said.
"No, Illumined Mother, I don't. This is more than I can bear."
"Elith, child," the paragon said. She stepped closer, squeezed Elith's arm in her age-knotted hand. Despite the vast distance between them, Elith felt the warmth and gentle pressure.
"Look at me."
Elith's eyes met the paragon's.
"Look at me,"
the paragon repeated. Elith held the matriarch's gaze and found within that piercing stare an unexpected, depthless well of understanding and compassion.
"You possess the wisdom and skill to operate across all the domains of the first house. Hand, eye, mind, and voice," the paragon said. "Even your doubts reflect our highest ways. I sent you because you are the very embodiment of Sareth Hanan. And if our great house should fail in confronting this threat, I wanted to know that we had held nothing back, that we had given our all and our best. Truly, Elith, you are guided by the true star."
Elith felt the quiet force of the paragon's exhortation. And though the words couldn't assuage the deep doubts of her soul, she felt the ember of determination flare once more.
"I don't wish to question your judgment, but I fear I have a long road to walk before I become anything like the daughter you've described."
The paragon's eyes softened and crinkled at the edges in a smile.
"It is the striving that makes it so, dear."
Elith stood silently as the full weight of the task ahead settled upon her.
Titan bears the world indeed. The head of First House, along with her most trusted advisors, had deemed the unauthorized assassination of Quell necessary and right.
Elith searched her innermost being and found that despite her misgivings, she could not find it in herself to refuse, as though this was the very purpose for which she had been formed, placed upon her by some nameless cosmic destiny.
"I will serve the house in this," she said, "and accept my share of the consequences."
"If all goes well, the only consequence will be the continued prosperity of the Ascendants," the paragon said, releasing her.
"And for that, your share will be too great to measure. How long do you estimate for full effect to manifest?"
Elith thought for a moment of what she'd learned about the health of the world and its essential structures and composition.
"I would guess 14 months at the longest," she said.
"Perhaps as few as 9, but I don't know what impact this developing threadline might play. The planet may be more fragile than we know."
"If the Hezra is properly motivated, the whole populace could be assessed and relocated in 6, said the paragon. "We should have plenty of time."
"If they are properly motivated," Elith echoed.
"Yes.
But that work is not your concern, and I am not yet too ancient for such tasks. These are the sorts of impossibly tangled webs that your poor mother must unweave. And also weave, I suppose. Perhaps you understand now why I look so old, and why I cherish my gardening. It's the only place I have where everything is exactly what it appears to be."
She reached up then and brushed her fingers along Elith's cheek, a shocking display of tenderness.
"I have every confidence in you," she said.
"Let me know the moment your work is finished, and we'll have you home in a heartbeat."
"It will be done."
"Sareth Hanan continue to be your guide, my brightest of daughters."
"Sareth Hanan be our way, Illumined Mother."
The connection closed, in its characteristic soft fading from one reality to another, and Elith was once more sitting on her bed. The afternoon sun streamed through the windows, its light unable to illuminate the dark road that now lay before her. Chapter 13. The new directive didn't require significant changes to Elith's manner of operation. It simply focused and intensified it. She needed more information from the planet itself and time to identify the best target site. But what Elith needed most was rejuvenation. Of all the techniques of the First House, none was more potent than the planet-killing power of revealing the Silent Gate, nor were any more costly to the conduit through which that power flowed. She took several trips out to scout the area and continue her analysis, but for the first few days, she forced herself to spend the better portion of her time eating and sleeping and tending to the weariness deep in her bones. In the midst of the third day, while she was reviewing data on the threadline within Orinnes, a detail unexpectedly called her mind back to Revic. And in that moment, the two worlds were paired. The thought of Quell's coming end awakened within her the grief of Revic's loss, still lingering. The realization came then of how little she'd considered it since the beginning of her mission. There'd been no time, no room in her mind to reflect upon it. And in that darkness, it had grown. She wept then, wept for Revic and the other worlds she had ended, and for the hardship she had endured, and for that which had yet to be done. There was neither shame nor weakness in the release. Elith emptied herself of the emotion, allowed it to pour out until it had exhausted itself, and the soul burden had lifted. Afterward, she washed her face, went up to the rooftop terrace of the hotel, and spent an hour looking out over the city. She recalled elements of Revic that she had admired, its three moons in their varied arcs, the crackling scent of its dry days, and the refreshing fragrance of its rain, the fire in its heart. But she did not linger on these things. She acknowledged them, gave them each their moment of appreciation, and then let them slip away. And reminded herself, too, that all she had done was in service to a greater and higher call. The personal pain was a small price for the order and peace she worked to preserve. Elith returned from the rooftop and treated herself to an early dinner at one of the more upscale restaurants in the area. The menu claimed it was authentic Prian cuisine. Elith had no way to judge the veracity of the statement, having never visited the world. But the meal featured an explosion of flavors, a strong, gamey meat, accompanied by sweet tart dried fruit and punctuated by a slow heat from bright peppers. She lingered over the dish, savoring the taste and texture, allowing the sensations to help center her once more in her body and in the moment. By the time she returned to her room, she felt more herself, her mind clearer. And the following day, she devoted more time to the world outside, studying the environment, and was able to identify her target site. By the end of the sixth day, she felt strong enough to carry out her difficult task. Though she still didn't know everything she would have liked to, her relationship with Quell was sufficiently developed to see the job through. Questions would linger, she knew, and they would have no avenue for answering once her work was done. As always, there was no joy in the coming end of her assignment. But it was necessary, and the First House of the Ascendants had forged her to be the instrument of their wise judgment. As evening came on, Elith gathered her few belongings together and laid them all out on the bed, as she always did, taking inventory. She loaded the items in her particular way, the process, equal parts operational checklist, and preparatory ritual. Preparing her tools prepared her mind, her body, and her spirit. At the end, again, two things remained, the interpreter and the frost oak branch. As she packed them, Elith thought that for this particular mission she might preserve the soil of Quell along with the branch, a fitting reminder for the act itself and for its necessity. Once her gear was ready, she swept the room once more, verifying she'd left nothing behind that might serve as a clue to her identity or intentions. She'd already made arrangements to release the room in 2 days, though she wouldn't be returning to it after that night. Just one more false trail, in case anyone came looking. Satisfied that all was ready, Elith left the hotel and made her way to the target site. The thread line within Orinnes kissed the surface with a wide point of contact, perhaps as much as 2 miles in diameter, around which a large memorial park had been built. The size provided plenty of options for where to strike, but was larger than ideal. Given her preference, she would have searched for something with a tighter focal point to ensure maximum efficacy. But the park was well designed and cultivated, with numerous walks winding through rich natural areas. The evening air was dry and cold, and though a fair number of people were strolling through the park when she arrived, they all tended to walk close together, quietly absorbed in their own thoughts or conversations and paying little heed to others. The area had a gentle restraint to it that seemed to encourage introspection and quiet awe, as some mix of library and monastery might, though most would attribute it to the remarkable design of the park. Elith knew the source of its influence ran much deeper and was far more ancient. She casually made her way toward the interior of the park, to a point she had identified earlier. It was off a side path that diverged from the main flow and seemed to attract less traffic than other areas. When she arrived, there was no one else in view, and she ducked from the lit walkway into the darkened natural area where she was concealed among the trees and the shadows they cast in the moonlight and starlight. There she laid her pack down to one side and crouched. For a few minutes she just waited and listened and allowed herself to absorb the sense of the place. Even knowing the poison that was working its way through the planet, Elith found it difficult to feel anything other than peace in that quiet night. Once more, her strange fondness for the planet reemerged. It was to her a deep tragedy that such a world should be the one to fall victim to such a terrible curse. Perhaps at least she could assuage her guilt at its loss with the knowledge that she was offering it its only possible cure. She dug her fingers into the earth of Quell, drew out a handful of the soil, held it tight in her fist. It was cool and damp, healthy and rich. She held it for a time, and then for a moment was hesitant to open her hand, recalling the vision where she had taken from the ground not soil, but bone and ash. But she did relax her fist, knowing the reality would chase away the fantasy. She looked at the earth there in her palm for a span, noted its dark color, flecked here and there with glimmers and glints of the trace minerals within as they caught the cold light, felt its weight, paid Quell its due. As was her ritual, she took a small vial out of her vest pocket and sifted the soil into it gently, capturing the last essence of the planet as it was before she pronounced its doom. And now the time was upon her. Elith got to her feet, cleared her mind of all but what lay ahead. A steadying breath, the hand sign for An. "From the void, all come," she began. "To the void, all return." And she spoke to Quell, her voice quiet as a mother speaking comfort to a sick and sleeping child, describing to the planet itself all she'd learned about it. The history written in its thread lines, its place in the universe, the infinite network of life teeming from its upper atmosphere, through its surface and down into deep places no human eye had ever reached, nor would. Where Revic had been a fire-hearted world, Quell's essence was more of water, a fluid and flowing spirit with deep-run veins and arteries. As Elith moved through the protocol, she reached forward into the planet's inevitable end and described it. Those watercourses, life-giving as they were now, were also Quell's death, the destabilizing force that would tear the world apart. And with the words of the deep language, drawn together from the fabric of the cosmos, Elith began to loose them. As she spoke, she felt herself sliding into the current of building energy, the terrible draw of infinite vastness, a riptide that pulled at her very self and threatened to carry her into oblivion. The beauty of Quell, magnified in her mind or soul or whatever of her it was that remained her in the midst of all the forces she was experiencing, building to an unbearable intensity as though she was staring into the heart of a star only to find something yet brighter within. An overwhelming fear seized her then, that she was destroying a work of the highest art, a finely crafted jewel of the heavens. And yet the power surging through her every atom brought an exhilaration she had never before known. Terror and ecstasy merged. Her body trembled with the sensation as though light itself, or an energy purer still, rippled through her veins and across every nerve. And beneath her, something else, too. As she described Quell, the planet seemed to shift away from the words, slipping aside, elusive, like a truth glimpsed but not yet fully known. Halfway through the protocol, a resonant harmony seemed to join with her words, lending new dimensions of power, an ecstatic rise and expansion, and unfolding unfathomable depths beneath her. She struggled to maintain hold of the network of threads that made her work possible, the connection and relationship of all things one to another. The infinite pool of the cosmos spread through her mind's eye. She was becoming one with that pool, feeling it subsume her. Quell was slipping away as she drew closer and closer to the event horizon beyond all concept of time or space or meaning or self. Around her, reality bent and roiled as Elith strove to regain control. Something was terribly, terribly wrong. The resonant harmony grew louder, threatened to overwhelm her words. And within it, Elith heard tones she'd heard before, the voice of Eth Amuin joining with hers, repurposing her speech for his own ends. Another voice spoke to her then, and she knew it was her own, calling to her. All her training drawing her back from the bright abyss that threatened to steal her away for all eternity. And warning her, crying out to her to abandon the protocol, to leave it unfinished. She began to return to herself, body trembling with the cosmic power that now coursed through her and felt certain to disintegrate her. And Quell, firm beneath her feet, felt infinitely distant, untouchable by even the great storehouse of energy she'd built within. Something beyond description separated them, a great nameless fear and wonder, before which all worlds fell silent, struck her speechless too. Even the words of the deep language were insufficient. The proclamation died within her. Power flowed out, draining from her like a cascading waterfall, a current so wide and deep and strong that Elith felt her being would sunder. Too small a channel for such magnitude. Quell seemed to bob and float upon it gently, as though any force brought against that world would only carry it to its own destination. And all around, the cosmic fabric roiled and seethed as though a great serpent thrashed within it. And then, all of that energy began to build against her, rising, spreading, a bubble of molten lead, searing and inexorable. There was no escaping it, no turning away, no dodging aside. The entire span of the thread line felt as though it would erupt and eject a half mile of planet into the atmosphere. But there was nothing she could do. Her feet remained fixed upon the earth,
bound to the planet and its fate. The wave of power rushed toward her, her utter dissolution riding upon its crest. And just as it felt like neither the planet nor Elith could withstand any more, the energy dissipated, as though an avalanche of rock and ice had struck her and proved to be nothing more than mist. She fell back, blank and empty, shattered by the event. There was no comprehension, no description, no thought or word to anchor her. And in her state of shock, her eyes saw not the physical world beneath her, but rather something hidden deep within it, a vibrating sort of light beyond all manner of description filtered from within the world. Some span of time passed, seconds or centuries, before Elith began to come back to herself, and the concept of time itself had meaning again. In that last moment before recovery, in that thin place between the physical and whatever reality she was falling back from, she grasped that vibrating light and tied it to an experience she could remember. It was something like what she imagined music might look like if it had shape and substance. Resonance upon resonance. Possibility folded within possibility. And then awareness returned. Unfamiliar, oppressive, Elith found herself sitting heavily on the ground, her arms behind her to support her weight. Around her, the grass and brush and trees stood withered as though by severe drought. A strong odor of ozone clung to the air. Elith knew she had to flee. She barely had strength to crawl. Somehow, she found a way to her feet and staggered from the sight through a reality that seemed distant and made of mist. Her body felt hollow to the very center of her being, a weakness magnified by the trembling of every muscle, as though she could not withstand the weight of mere existence. And as she stumbled through the night, ravaged by the aftershocks of revealing the silent gate so soon after Revic, the magnitude of what had just occurred bore down upon her. Quell had resisted. Worse, it had absorbed its own death and cast it away. The planet had overcome her. Chapter 14. Elith sat cross-legged on the floor of her hotel room, staring at a blank wall as the sun rose over the city behind her. She barely remembered the walk home, could even now hardly process any of the events that had preceded the present moment. The boundaries of time had blurred so that each instant contained eternity. The past and future were the same, and the now claimed to be all that had ever been. Words like vertigo and nausea might once have had meaning to her, but they were flat, empty, and powerless in the midst of her present suffering. Her very self churned inside out in an endless cycle. Her body seemed at the mercy of every motion in the universe, from the quiver of her own atoms to the spinning of Quell and its travel in orbit, through to the twirl of the galaxy as it swept across the ever-expanding universe, falling in every direction at once at speeds too terrifying to quantify. But as brutal as the physical toll was, the inner battle was the more horrifying. Madness crouched at her doorstep. She could feel it there, just outside the edges of her vision. The after image of the cosmos calling to her, inviting her to gaze into itself once more, that it might master her, willing her to do so. It took all her waning might to refuse that call of the infinite and the eternal, knowing a single glance in its direction would destroy her. She strove to maintain footing on shifting sands, fought to constrain the universe to something that could be experienced by an entity as limited and frail as herself. But there didn't seem to be enough of her left. Not enough of her left. She'd reached too soon again into that vast energy, and this was the price. The entity that had once been Elith Kiriel, advocate of the first house of the Ascendants, was dissipating. Her emotions, her body, her memories, everything she was or ever had been spread and thinned like paint on a spinning wheel. In the chaos, the echo of a voice swirled past, her sister Niera's, calm and sure.
"Each time is unique," she had said. "Each its own process for you to discover, to pass through, and from which to emerge. And you will emerge."
"You will emerge," Niera had told her. Elith grasped for that simple phrase, tried to anchor herself with it. But it was too thin. A mist thought, insubstantial against the rising thunder of the cosmic calling. And then, in a last desperate spark of will, she had a thought. And that thought became action. Though it violated all the precepts of the house, she spoke the phrase to herself in the deep language. "You will emerge," she said, repeating the words as a mantra. "You will emerge." And with the fullness and force of the deep language behind it, the reality began to take shape. "You will emerge." Emerge. Against all hope, Elith found a way back from that cataclysmic brink. Made a way. The lingering echo of the universe collapsed once more into the speck of a world that she could inhabit. Her breathing came first, the cycle of life flowing in and out of her lungs, followed by her heartbeat. Then the weariness of her muscles, the hunger of her belly, and finally, the floor upon which she sat, all became fully tangible again and stable. Gradually, Elith recovered herself. She had descended to grapple with death itself and somehow emerged victorious, though not unscarred. It was not a battle she could win again. And as her world became once more coherent, she came to realize that the victory had already cost her more than she could have ever dreamed possible. In her desperation, she had wielded the power of the deep language in words of her own devising. There had been no sealing phrase, no rigid protocol. It had been an improvisation. She had violated a core tenet of the first house. To save herself. What was the point of all her training if she were willing to throw aside all she'd been taught in a final moment of crisis? She hadn't considered the risks before she'd acted. But it had worked. And that troubled her almost as much as the violation. The Paragon had told her she was the very embodiment of Sarath Hanan, had proclaimed her guided by the true star. Had she abandoned the way merely to preserve her own life? Or had she manifested it by finding a way where none had been? There was a rift in her soul now, a crack in a foundation she had previously believed adamantine. And into that crack, other doubts seeped like water. Quell had escaped its doom. Had that failing too been hers? Or was it due to some insufficiency within revealing the silent gate, the first house's supreme right? Or could the root run even deeper, into the deep language itself? Her thoughts and emotions churned, but she sat with them, confronted them. In time, the waves of doubt receded from the shores of the deep language and the first house and lapped at her feet. The failure of revealing the silent gate, she decided, lay not with first house or its teachings, but rather somewhere between her and Quell. Her work was not yet done. Finally, she rose, her legs trembling and stiff. Outside, it was growing dark again with early evening. She was relieved to discover it was still the same day. The battle had been one of her innermost being, its rending a soul wound. Her body would recover soon enough. The rest of her, she knew, would take some time longer. Though she was ravenously hungry, the idea of food, of flavor and texture, seemed too much to confront. She coaxed herself into a meal of a light broth and a few thinly sliced vegetables, which she had delivered to her room. After she'd eaten, she lay on her bed to contemplate the road ahead. Each layer she had peeled back from this strange planet had revealed only deeper mysteries and more harrowing discoveries. Quell was a greater threat
than she could have possibly conceived, apparently more than even the Paragon herself had foreseen. The only power Elith could imagine capable of dealing with the world now was that great and terrible wave of destruction kept within the storehouses of the Hezra. The contingency. Could Quell resist even that? That thought triggered one of her last lucid memories from her struggle against the planet. Stretching back to that final moment, she recalled having anchored the encounter to some metaphorical image, some faint shadow of the experience that she could recover. An image of music, harmonic overtones weaving together, overlapping and lending strength one to another. The memory of it seemed pale and thin. The mental picture, a barely grasped wisp of the actual experience, a poor analogy to something beyond description. But it was enough. It was the same impression she'd experienced wandering the grounds of Eth Amuin's mountain preserve, though magnified times beyond counting. And within that, she felt the connection to Quell's gentle evasiveness. That, too, she had felt within Eth Amuin himself. There was no doubt now that he was the key to what was happening within Quell. The task to put the planet down was beyond her capacity to complete. Her failed attempt had left her too broken, too depleted. And though she didn't yet want to acknowledge the fact, Elith's heart whispered that Quell may have damaged her so deeply that she would never again carry out a mission for her house. But there was more work she could do here, in final service. If she could extract the right information from Eth Amuin, she might then be able to equip one of her sisters to do what she herself now could not. And if she had even the barest glimpse of the true star that the Paragon had declared was guiding her, she was driven to follow it. Now, she knew, it was leading her back to that man. She didn't have much to go on. The area of wilderness between Orinnes and Alanis was vast, and far too much ground to cover on foot in any useful period of time. It would have been easy to wander that land for weeks without gain. Elith sat up and pulled out her navigator to review what little data she had on the region. She located the marker she dropped while at Hawk's cabin. That was one fixed point she could work from. And her crash site, though she didn't know exactly where that lay, she'd studied enough of the terrain while selecting her landing zone to make an educated guess. But when she scrolled the view around the surrounding landscape, none of the structures she would have expected were visible. Either the detail had done a masterful job of concealing their various locations, or the nav data was outdated. Or intentionally obscured. She thought then of the drones she had seen mapping her crash site, and of Ame's comment about having to spend days hunting down stray ones. The local authority. Undoubtedly, they would have all kinds of useful information for her, as long as she didn't mind trying to snatch it from within the jaws of the Hezra. The HQ would be her target then, but not tonight. She prepared a report for the Paragon and pushed it through the passive tangle connection. And though she intended to sleep afterward, she spent 2 hours lying awake, anticipating a response to come through at any moment. But none came. After a fitful sleep, Elith rose before dawn. She ran through her meditation sequence first, trusting that the routine would help build her back up and aid in her much-needed recovery. Judging from the feeling of her motion, she guessed her strength was perhaps already as much as 70% recovered. Her inner being, however, was still raw and empty. She hoped she would have no need of the deep language anytime soon, but there was no reason to trust in that hope. When she had completed all her preparations, the sun was still below the horizon, so she sat in a chair by the window to wait for it. Its appearance cast long-fingered shadows, and its swift rising seemed to rake the city toward the horizon, stirring its denizens to their daily activities. Elith continued to wait until the movement of citizens had reached a steady flow, and then joined the throng, headed to the local authority headquarters. Like all authority structures, the HQ had an imposing presence. The Ascendants had long ago mastered the art of urban design as an instrument of social discipline. The building sat with a commanding view at the end of a long street, set back from it behind an open gate and a vast courtyard. The authority was guardian of both the individual citizens of the Ascendants and of the collective hierarchy itself. But the layout left little doubt as to which it considered most important. Walking across a courtyard of that scale was an isolating experience, and Elith found herself relieved and grateful to reach the shelter of the authority's center of power, despite knowing that the space had been constructed to evoke exactly that response. The headquarters housed the main departments for the majority of the local authority's functions. The citizens arriving were numerous, with diverse reasons for visiting. Elith's business was with the law enforcement arm. She spent several minutes outside the facility, walking as though uncertain exactly where she should be going, which was at least partially accurate. But she used the time to scan the perimeter defenses, to spot the cameras, to count the officers standing guard. She did the same as she moved into the main lobby, building up a security profile from all the little details. She'd need to take them all into account when she returned later. Elith didn't want to spend any more time on site than absolutely necessary, knowing she was being observed every moment she was on the grounds. But if she had hopes of infiltrating the authority's archives, she needed a clear picture of what she'd be up against. She joined a group of people on one of the many elevators and rode it to the 8th floor, to the Law Enforcement General Reception Area. Notably, the elevator didn't present options to stop at the 9th or 10th floors, skipping instead to the 11th. Elith guessed the archives were on one of the upper floors then, off limits to the public. Two others got off the elevator on the same floor, and she trailed behind them, walking slowly to take in as much as she could. There were three officers working the receiving desk. After a quick scan, Elith narrowed her attention to the one seated farthest left. An older gentleman, with cropped gray hair and a bristly mustache to match. He was the most severe-looking of the three, and she guessed that his demeanor was a first line of defense against trivial inquiries. Whatever aura he exuded appeared to work its magic, because the two people ahead of her went to the other officers without hesitation, even though they both had to wait in line. The area beyond the receiving desk was restricted. Two large doors stood like guards at their posts on either side of the desk, mysteriously labeled 9 and 17. Each had a small window in the center. Through 9's, she was able to spot a sign pointing off to various departments. Judging from the look of it, navigating the halls without an escort would be a challenge on its own. She looked again at the gruff desk sergeant, who still managed to be unoccupied. Maybe there was a different play she could make. After all, she was already inside. In just a few moments, Elith had a quick persona assembled and a straightforward plan. She would just go and ask. From her bag, she removed a small disc, thin, translucent, and the size of her fingernail. She just needed to get it within range of the archive system to inject codes to enable remote access from her personal terminal. She slipped it into a pocket and then waited off to one side until the other two officers were both deeply engaged with other citizens. When her time came, she approached the desk. The older man had his head down, working intently at a display that was hidden behind the tall counter of the desk, and he didn't seem to notice her. Elith took a few moments to watch him work and to gather what information she could. There didn't appear to be any personal effects at the man's station. All business, then, or perhaps a man who needed no reminders of his past. There was an intensity about him, a focus on his work to the exclusion of all else. But his build suggested he hadn't spent his career behind a desk. Though he'd softened around the middle, she could tell he'd been in the field for most of his service. Injured in the line of duty, then, maybe. Or forced to come in due to age or some mistake made. Given enough time, she knew she could use her basic bag of social tricks to gain information. But the clock running in the back of her mind was already flashing, warning her that she was rapidly approaching the limit of how long she could risk staying on site. A shortcut was available to her. The technique was officially known as unwalling the garden, but she and her sisters called it simply the communion, and its pain would be twofold. Though the draw on power was small, it required the use of the deep language, and she was hesitant to wield it again so soon after her recent wounding. And in a Hezra headquarters, no less. Then there was the effect of the technique itself, which would bring its own hurt, but in a different way. She watched the man for a few seconds more, knowing that beneath that granite exterior, a deep well of pain lay sealed. And drowned within it, the key she needed. There was no decision for her to make. The mission dictated the choice. Hers was but to act and to endure. Elith stepped up to the counter directly in front of the man and quietly spoke the words of the deep language. A once hidden garden. Sunlight permeates. The weight of the declaration rested on her. She was its target. And as its power worked through her, she felt her perceptions broaden and deepen, and the man before her unfolded from a simple flat caricature into an infinitely complex, multifaceted entity, full of joy and hope and pain and regret, and the shattered prism of all that it was to be human. She had brought upon herself a radical openness to another, a near tangible empathy that spanned the gulf between individuals while remaining wholly herself. It was true communion, terrible to withstand.
"If you're talking to me, you're going to have to speak up," the man said, stern and correcting.
She felt the seething tension within him, the pressure of the low-intensity abuse he suffered each day at the hands of the frustrated citizens he had to process.
"Excuse me, sir," she said.
"Yeah."
The officer's gaze lingered on his work for a moment. But when he finally looked up, his eyes changed when he saw her, softened. She smiled broadly, and he even smiled a little, though it looked like it had been so long since he'd done it that he'd almost forgotten how. In that smile, she felt the memories stirring within him, the flicker of a thing lost, momentarily regained.
"What can I help you with?"
he said.
"I'm a student at the academy, and I'd like to visit the authority archives."
It was the first hook she would lay out, establishing herself as young, in need of help. He was a guardian by nature, she could feel, a man who had joined the service out of a sense of responsibility to protect those around him, particularly the young. And he wasn't seeing her with clear eyes now. He was responding to the connection he felt to her, though he would never be able to understand why.
Why would that be?
"I'm in the information sciences program, and we're supposed to do a case study on our preferred career track."
That was her second hook. His devotion to the authority was a source of pride and of pain. It had cost him something, something dearly treasured. The officer perked up, as she hoped he would.
"Oh, thinking about joining up?"
"Yes, sir, one day. I hope to, anyway."
"That's great," he said. "Glad to hear young people are still interested in the service."
He didn't resent the authority, even though it was obvious he didn't care for his current assignment. Loyal to the service. Enough to endure a tedious job, as long as he could continue to play a part. To make it worth whatever he'd lost.
"But the archives are off limits," he continued. "We have a civic liaison department, though. Have you tried talking with them?"
"No, sir. I was hoping to see more of the operational side of things."
The officer chuckled. "Looking for the real story, huh?"
"Yes, sir."
He leaned back in his chair, thinking for a moment, evaluating her. His tumble of emotions swirled around her.
"Well, it's not like a library, you know. Those guys handle a lot of sensitive information. You can't just wander around in there."
"Yes, sir. That's why I wanted to highlight the service. being able to handle that much information and keep it all secure. It's such an important job, I figured you'd be the best at it.
He smiled again, pride in the work showing through. You remind me of my kid, he said. He's probably 10 years older than you, but he used to get that same look in his eyes.
I guess he might still. Been a while since I've seen him.
After he said it, his brow furrowed slightly, and he shook his head, as though surprised to hear himself say those words. His burden for his son struck her like a wave breaking. A relationship severed, one he longed to mend and was powerless to repair. Her eyes welled at his pain, feeling in one instant what he for so long had borne alone. She could sense he had never openly spoken of how much he missed his boy.
I'd like to be able to help, he said, straightening. But you really should go through the civic liaison guys. That's kind of their job.
He saw the tears in her eyes then, mistook their cause. I am sorry, he added.
Oh, it's all right, she said. I knew it was a long shot. I just hoped to do something on the authority, but there are other places I can go.
That was the payoff. Not only was he losing a chance to help her, he was costing the service an eager young proselytizer.
I understand, she continued, dropping her gaze, hoping to appear crushed while also looking like she was trying not to appear so. Thank you for your time and your service.
She stood by the desk for a moment, then looked at the man, gave him a sad smile, and turned to leave.
Well, hold on a second, the officer said. Tell me again what exactly you were wanting to do.
Just to talk to someone about your archive protocols, storage, search, retrieval, that sort of thing, or even just see the facility. He smoothed his mustache while he thought, and she could sense him grasping for something, anything he could do to keep from disappointing her. And then an idea occurred to him. He sat forward, closer to her.
What's your name?
Elenia?
Well, Elenia. I can't get you anywhere where people are working with live operations, but maybe I can get someone to let you take a peek at the archives.
That would be amazing.
You really do remind me of my kid, he said, shaking his head again but smiling. Give me a few minutes. Let me see what I can do.
Thank you so much. The man got up from the desk and disappeared down a corridor for about 10 minutes. When he came back, he waved her over to the desk.
I'm not sure how much help it'll be, but it's not nothing, he said. Just do me a favor and be extra polite. I told him you were my niece.
A moment later, a young officer came out of the door marked 17, looking annoyed. The desk sergeant pointed at Elith, and the officer motioned for her to follow him. He curtly escorted her around, professional but obviously irritated by the interruption of his normal duties. The old sergeant had either called in a favor or pulled rank. From the way the officer treated her, she guessed it was the latter. He showed her a few trivial pieces of hardware, told her basic information that was publicly available anyway, and ended the tour by letting her step through the door into the main floor of the archives, where he told her she could spend 30 seconds looking and absolutely not touching anything. The room was small, perhaps 12 feet to a side, and surprisingly sparse for a storehouse of all of the local authorities' intelligence. Several racks of hardware lined the walls and formed aisles through the middle of the room. 4 terminals sat to one side for direct archive access. An attendant looked up when she and her escort entered, but returned to his work after a quick wave from his colleague. Elith casually slipped her hand into her pocket, found the disk device she'd placed within it. With her other hand, she pointed to the rear wall of hardware. How often do you have to refresh all those rigs? She asked. And in the moment that her escorting officer followed her gesture, she flexed the disk between her fingers to activate it and flicked it toward the terminals. As soon as it touched the ground, 12 tiny legs unfolded, and the translucent device spidered its way the remaining few feet and disappeared into the equipment.
I can't answer that, the young officer said. Come on, time's up.
Elith obediently followed him, and 8 minutes after she'd walked through door 17, she was walking back out with everything she needed.
The young officer closed the door behind her without saying goodbye. Elith made sure to catch the desk sergeant's eye as she passed, though he was talking with another citizen. He seemed lighter, almost lively. He interrupted his conversation to call over to her.
You get what you needed?
Yes, sir, thank you so much.
Glad to help, he answered. Hope to see you in the cadet corps soon.
I'll be sure to stop by. May you ever ascend, sir.
May we all, young lady.
She smiled and waved on her way out, still carrying with her the lingering sense of the man's deep hurt. He, too, would experience some after effects, some rawness of emotion reawakened. Elith was sorry to have forced him to pay the price for expediency, but the mission had demanded it. The moment she left the authority headquarters, she knew she had to consider herself marked. She returned to her hotel room and gathered her things, then spent the next several hours following her counter-surveillance protocols. She would move again as soon as she could. In the meantime, she secured a new place to work by reserving a private study room in one of the Academy's off-site auxiliary libraries. There was nothing out of the ordinary about an Academy student working long into the night, and she knew the quiet atmosphere would make it easier for her to detect any unusual activity should anyone come looking for her. Once in the study room, Elith laid her terminal on the table and opened an array of displays. Activating the disk she'd planted during her earlier incursion opened access to the local authorities' archives, and within minutes, she was scouring the databanks for all the intelligence she could mine on the preserve. As she'd anticipated, some of the data had been recently updated, and the timestamps matched the few days after her crash. Though the authority had left the crash site the day after, it appeared from the data that, just as Ame had expected, they'd left some drones behind. The last update was marked 5 days after her ship had gone down, though whether the reporting drone had been recalled or destroyed wasn't clear from the information she could access. Even with the authorities' most up-to-date mapping of the region, though, there were no obvious markers for where Eth Amuin's main residence might be. On a separate display, she brought up a view from her local navigational device where she'd gathered her own data. When she overlaid the two, she was still disappointed. Though there were a number of housing clusters, similar to what she'd seen while at Hawk's cabin, none matched the profile Elith had formed in her mind, based on Ame's brief description. Too many neighbors, not enough fences. Still, when she looked at the two sets of data together, something itched in her mind. A feeling like looking at an altered picture of a loved one without being able to identify exactly what portion has been changed. The corner of the mouth, not quite right for the smile, or the wrinkles around the eyes being too many or too few. When she let herself stop searching so intently, her eye kept finding its way to a patch of wilderness near one of the lower peaks of the mountain. There was nothing special about it that she could see, except that it might have a nice view of the main peak, if anyone had thought to build there. She dismissed it each time she looked at it, until she finally realized how many times she'd dismissed it. Finally, she started cycling back through the archive records, watching the way the landscape had changed over the years. The surrounding area changed, as she would have expected, which was to say sometimes hardly at all, and other times in unexpected ways, the way natural progress tended to be neither linear nor fully predictable. And yet, the spot that kept drawing her eye changed a little too consistently, a little too predictably. And now that she looked, she realized there was a hole in the map, a blank space where the topographical data looked too clean. She'd never been to that specific area, but she'd seen enough of the mountain and the surrounding wilderness to know what felt right. The records had been altered. Her instincts told her there was something hidden on that ridge, and Elith knew that was where she had to go.